Good evening. Let's call for the special council meeting and board and commission interviews of August 15th, 2023. Before we get started, I'd like to remind participants of some procedural items for this meeting. During the meeting, remote participants will remain muted when not speaking. If a remote participant has a question or comment, please use the raise hand feature, and speakers will be called upon to speak one at a time. Members of the public may participate in person, online, or by telephone to provide public comment. Please submit a speaker card to the city clerk in person or use the raise hand feature online to request to speak, start on the telephone. Location and teleconferencing details are available on the council agenda. Captions are available to viewers accessing this meeting via Zoom. Captions can be displayed or hidden using the live transcript button in Zoom. First up is roll call, city clerk, and we please have roll call.
Mayor Klein.
Present.
Vice Mayor Dean.
Present.
Councilman Melton.
Present.
Councilmember Cisneros.
Present.
Councilmember Mellinger.
Present.
Councilmember Serena Boston.
Present.
Councilmember Sell.
Present.
Seven present.
Thank you. Let's move to our study session in our one item. Board and commission interviews. Is there a staff report?
Yes, Mayor David Carnahan, City Clerk. Tonight, Council is scheduled to interview 8 applicants for various vacancies on the city's boards and commissions. There's currently 1 vacancy on the Board of Library Trustees, 2 on the Heritage Preservation Commission, 1 on the Housing Human Services Commission, 1 on the Personnel Board. Tonight, you have applicants for all of those except for Heritage Preservation. And most of the applicants will be in person. You do have your first interview and your third interview. So Carol Weiss and Linda Price are going to join via Zoom. And Council scheduled to make appointments for boards and commissions on August 29th during your regular meeting.
Thank you.
That concludes the staff.
Thank you. Are there any questions of staff? Seeing none, I will go ahead and open the public hearing on this item. Members of the public wishing to address council, please submit a speaker card to the city clerk or use the raise hand button now or dial star 9 on your telephone. If you indicate that you wish to speak, I will call members of the public participating in person first, and the city clerk will ask remote participants to unmute their microphones when it's their turn to address council. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. I have no in-person speaker cards. City clerk, do we have any remote participants wishing to speak?
No, Mayor.
I'll close the public comment. Council will be interviewing 8 candidates. City clerk, we're ready for our first candidate.
All right, so we'll move Carol over to being a panelist. And so Carol should be coming over.
Okay. So that's working. Okay, good. Yeah.
Hi, Carol.
Hello.
Welcome. Good.
Thank you.
Is this okay? Everything's good?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Fine.
Fantastic. Let me take a moment to explain our process. Each council member, as you well know, has an opportunity to speak and ask you a question. This interview is scheduled to last for about 15 minutes, so please keep that in mind as you're answering our questions. First up for questions is Vice Mayor Dean.
Thank you. Hi, Carol. It's great to see you, and thank you for your interest in serving on this commission. I enjoyed reading through your application. My question is related to one of your answers. You talked about in the question related to outlining the quality and adequacy of the housing stock that currently lives in Sunnyvale. You made some very salient points about the importance of age-friendly housing and talked about some of the housing we have that might not be serving the needs of our residents to a ubiquitous extent. What would you say for some kind of housing you want to see more of?
Yes, I think it is rather balanced in favor of one particular group. Even the affordable housing, this came up last night. The affordable housing is for a fairly elite group. If one person has to earn $150,000 and then that qualifies them for affordable housing, that leaves out a lot of our population, our service population, our teachers, the people who have to drive to Tracy every day and then come in here to do the work that we take for granted. So it's out of whack with our actual needs. And I think that that has to be addressed. And it's not addressed just by talking about affordable, because in our area, that's a very skewed definition. I know how it's come by, but it's very skewed.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your insights. And thank you again for applying.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Melton.
Hi, Carol. It's Russ. It's nice to see you, and thank you for applying. It's been a while since we served together on the Planning Commission. What do you think are going to be the differences between what you did on the Planning Commission and what might happen with regards to potential upcoming service on Housing and Human Services Commission, Carol?
It's another end of the spectrum. Planning Commission looks at projects that are to happen, to be, and tries to improve them, tries to make them fit the situation and the needs. At the other end of the spectrum is services, housing that is already available or not available, that might need to be supplemented, that might need to be modified. It's more in tune with current conditions, current problems.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Cisnero.
Hi, Carol. Good to see you. Thank you for applying and for submitting such an interesting application tree. It's clear that you have a very firm grasp and a lot of experience talking about these issues. But in your application, you called out a number of disparities between North and South Sunnyvale as it relates to service levels and housing. And I was wondering if you can speak more to why having that perspective on the Housing and Human Services Commission would strengthen it, or what should that commission be looking at that is not currently?
I think the Maffa Park development is a great opportunity to equalize the services between North and South Sunnyvale. One thing I pointed out was the lack of medical services. As the developers look to include retail, I had suggested that they need to look at things like, drop-in centers, medical urgent care centers, dental centers, which are very much lacking. As there are more people there, that's going to be a captive audience. So that's one area that could be improved, that could be supplemented. Another one would involve working with some of the associations, some of the clients of the city, working with programs like Sunnyvale Community Services, working with the programs that provide housing for the unhoused, finding shelter for them, daycare centers. There's a huge need for that, and it would be great to locate them in North Sunnyvale because it's near so many centers of employment. And that fits very well into retail spaces. I know it's not within our purview to talk about schools because that involves the school districts, perhaps private schools, but I'm very concerned about health, food supplies. For a number of projects, I suggested community gardens. Why couldn't there be community gardens so people can grow some of their own food? Really is a great opportunity to look at all of these. And it would be great if one of the large health providers like PAMF or Sutter Health or Kaiser would have a clinic there, satellite. they may need to be approached.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Mellinger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Carol, good to see you again. Thank you for applying. You put something in your application, your very last response, your very last question, that I did not know, that we have 27 Holocaust survivors living in Sunnyvale at Poverty Room. Yeah. Can you speak a little bit to, how you learned this? What's the situation that these folks are experiencing right now?
They're somewhat isolated. They're somewhat alone. Unfortunately, they don't have a lot of financial income. I found out about it from Patrick Ahrens, who some of you may know. He had been meeting with some of them and had been trying to set up connections so that they would have people to talk with, people to get together with for holidays, or to offer them rides, or to meet with them, because they are very much alone at this stage of their lives, and they're not doing well. So I know Patrick Ahrens of the De Anza College School Board has started taking some of a leadership role in this.
Thank you very much for calling this out in your application. I'll be reaching out to Patrick about that. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Srinivasan.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Carol. I really enjoyed reading your application, great application, great insight into a lot of things, which I really enjoyed reading. For example, you mentioned about preparation for the Planning Commission meetings. I really like what you said there. And then the age-friendly housing suggestions, those are really, really good. And then thanks for serving as a commissioner. The question I had is, in your application, you said that you submitted many study issues that properly belong to Housing and Human Services rather than Planning Commission. Can you give me one example?
Right. I made suggestions about what qualifies for accessible housing, and the fact that when developers were building townhouses, they would have something they considered accessible. But it's the very, very minimal. And when I asked if the Planning Commission should consider a study issue on this, for example, what goes into making housing more accessible? What can we do in the neighborhoods to make it more age friendly? I was told, oh, that doesn't belong with this commission, that belongs with the Housing and Human Services Commission. And that really stuck with me, because one of the major groups in Sunnyvale is an older population. And in my neighborhood, you have more than half of the homes are occupied by either one older person or an older couple. And they want to stay in Sunnyvale. They don't know where to go. They don't see any place as being hospitable to them. Townhouses are out of the question. When I've asked several developers, you could put in a private elevator or a stair lift. I've seen these. I'm actually in San Diego now, and I've seen these kinds of townhouses, very new, very striking. And a few of them have private elevators that go up all three floors. And my feeling was people would probably be willing, especially people who are selling their house, moving into a more, they would get a premium price. They would probably relish paying a little bit more if they could have that convenience. and be part of a smaller townhome community rather than, well, they don't need some of the, you know, the Sunrise that are being built yet. They want to stay here. They want to be active. So that's one thing that I've gotten pushback on, and I can't seem to make much progress. So I was hoping, well, maybe in another commission, it would be more doable.
Right. Thank you very much, and then thanks for the play. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Sell.
Hi, Carol. So I'm a former Housing and Human Services Commission. So I was looking at the work plan for the Housing and Human Services Commission coming up, and they say that universal basic income pilot program would be coming up on the agenda in the future, and maybe a safe RV parking pilot program. So I was wondering, what are your ideas to help make those kind of programs better? Just like off the top of your head, what?
I think it's very exciting that we're studying the universal basic income. There are other places we can look to, for example, Stockton and Oakland. From what I've read about them, and I've looked into it, people spend the money very wisely. Mm-hmm. They don't blow it on a vacation or an expensive car. They use it to buy their children shoes and school supplies, or to pay tuition at a community college, or save it so that they can start a small business. With the universal basic income, which doesn't have many restrictions on how people can spend it, it would be good to incorporate that with teaching the recipients a basic financial course. This is what you need to be careful about if you get a credit card. This is how checking accounts work. When you save your money, you want to look at interest rates. You want to make sure you're saving it in an insured, a basic course in finance, which isn't given, should go along with that. But everything I've read has shown very good results. And the criteria are just below the median income level. I don't believe it's given to the unhoused. I think it's been given to the poor, not the extremely poor. So they have a chance to pull themselves up. And that levels the playing field a little bit. Linda, what was your other question about?
Safe RV vehicles. But am I taking too much time?
Yes.
We'll go ahead. Actually, I'll let you go. So that was going to be one of my questions. So
okay.
One of my possible. Go ahead and talk about safe RVs again.
Yeah, I've seen some of these programs, and I've seen them where they're in like church parking lots, and the churches have been very cooperative as far as installing porta potties or allowing them to shower, and being part of a group of faith institutions that take turns monitoring it. It can be done that way on a volunteer basis. It's done that way in Saratoga, and the Saratoga Ministerial Association shares the responsibilities for that, and it's rotated. It's really heartbreaking to see whole families living, as I've seen them, in one of these, and I don't know how they get their children to school. I don't know how they register them in a school district. I don't know how they manage to get their mail. I don't know what they do if they need to have a shower. It's a very comprehensive problem, but it is like a gap in services. So for the time being, it can be done. And I think it can be done through volunteer organizations like Houses of Worship, which have large parking lots that 6 days of the week are empty. They stand empty.
Okay. Thank you very much, Carol. Thank you for your interest. Thank you for applying. Thank you for your past service, of course. A final decision will be made by council on August 29th. And then the city clerk, of course, will contact you after that for the final results. So thank you for joining us. Thanks for taking time all your way to go through this process.
Thank you. I appreciate being able to do this remotely.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
City clerk.
Yes,
for next
quarter. This looks
kind of frightening over here.
No Inquisition. It's okay, nice. Good. I saw a play about the Inquisition when I was in Europe recently. So,
okay. Hi, Barry. Let me take a moment to explain our process. Each council member will have a chance to ask you a question. And this will take approximately 15 minutes. So as you're answering, keep that in mind. First up is Councilmember Melvin.
Good. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
I'm Russ. It's really nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
Great. And I enjoyed reading through your application. Thank you for applying. I think the write-up that you provided about how the workings of the personnel board are largely correct to my knowledge. The personnel board is interesting because we appoint a person to the personnel board and then stuff never really comes back to city council. It's truly an independent thing. The only thing I think I could add.
Smart on your behalf.
Keep it completely independent.
Right.
I hear what you're saying. Some additional things I just wanted to make you aware of and just test your comfort level. Number one is that oftentimes the personnel appeals can come from the Department of Public Safety and can involve some pretty complicated things. And then the other thing is that our city attorney usually hires another attorney to represent the personnel board in sorting out all of these complicated matters. So I enjoyed reading your application. Is there anything that
you may know from my background that I've seen in law school? So any process that involves hiring more lawyers, I like that.
The Lawyer Employment Act of 2023. I got it. If there was anything that I said that alarms you, now would be your time to speak.
No.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions, but I think I'll save those until after all of your questions.
Okay. Yep. That's up to the mayor. So very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Councilmember Sears.
Hi.
Hi.
It's great to meet you. Thank you for submitting your application. I have a great resume for this. And I wanted to kind of understand, if you said that you worked in the governor's office in Tennessee.
That was a long time ago, but yes, I was on what was called policy planning staff of the governor. Mm-hmm. And that was between college and law school.
Okay, awesome. And so I think that's interesting to me because you've had experience working within a government body and then also from a legal perspective, to say, mediating these conversations. And I'd like to get your thoughts on how you think, of course, we're not, you know, the governor's office in Tennessee, right? We're the city of Sunnyvale.
Right.
But do you have any insights into how these two roles you've played would work on the personnel board?
Well, I was a public employee for 37 years. Because at the University of North Dakota, University of South Dakota, I was a public employee. I think during those 3 years, I was very fortunate during those 3 years in the governor's office because I got a very broad view of government. I worked with lots of different governmental agencies in state government and became somewhat familiar with city government a long time ago in a very distant place. So very different. But in fact, the first job I had in state government was a very ministerial job of taking grant applications for federal funds that localities would send in and getting input from various state agencies. And that was a great learning experience. So I don't know that much about city government, certainly not city government in California, but I have a general feel for what governmental operations are like.
Yeah, and how being a public employee and and all of that works together in these situations.
I will say, since I spent most of my life in Tennessee and North Dakota, South Dakota, I don't have a lot of experience with employees who are represented by bargaining units. Mm-hmm. I'm all for that. My dad was in the Plumbers and Pipefitters Union for 50 years. So I'm glad they are, but I have not had much experience with that.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Mellinger.
All right. Thank you very much for applying, Mr. Vickery. I feel like we've met before, but I can't place
it. We've met at campaign functions things.
Okay. Excellent. I couldn't place it.
Dave Chapman, by the way, one of your constituents, is a good friend of mine.
That's probably it. Okay. So you talked a little bit. You've been in management within academia. And can you give us an example of a conflict, some sticky situation, some sort of employee conflict that you've mediated, or brief overview of what it was and how you resolved it?
Well, I'll tell you about, I think, the toughest employee situation I had, without identifying people by name. I had an outstanding faculty member who was an alcoholic, and I learned that he was off with some students at a competition and was driving while drunk. And, you know, you go to bed at night thinking about the headlines about students who've been killed when the faculty was driving. And so I put him on mandatory leave. Now, he continued to be paid, so he didn't have a grievance against me, but he was a very popular professor. Five faculty members were in my office complaining, questioning, and they were five faculty members who usually supported me. And if you know anything about academia, that's unusual to have five who actually support you. So that was tough. But I had a background with issues of lawyers and alcohol, and I knew people around the country I could call. I got their input on how to handle it. And maybe more importantly, I called in one of the student leaders who I knew would know the situation and asked him what he knew. And of course, he knew more than I did. And basically ran by him the possibility that I might have to put the person on leave. And he thought that was the right thing to do. So that really helped, because I knew I would have understanding, at least within the student community. We proceeded to get the employee assistance with his alcohol problems. It wasn't his first time. And I don't know if, since I'm now retired from there, I don't know if it was his last problem with it. But it was a really tough situation in a lot of respects. And in hindsight, I think I handled it very well. But I also think whenever you get a situation like that, there's a lot of luck involved in how it turns out.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Srinivasan.
Thanks, Mayor. Nice seeing you, Barry.
Good to see you.
Thanks for applying. I really enjoyed reading your application, especially I was asked to apply. That is your response to. And then I also.
When you're 73 and retired, you're really not looking for things to do. You're looking for help with your golf game.
And I know you are involved in the community. Thanks for all your community services. One of the duties of personnel board is to hear appeals, and the findings and conclusions are final with no appeal. What are your thoughts on that? That's a big responsibility, right?
Oh, it is. But I come from a profession where we have a category called judges who do that all the time. And to me, that's just part of the process. I mean, this is, you know, I actually taught administrative law, so exhaustion of administrative remedies is a phrase that I'm familiar with. And so I think this is the way you have to structure it to be sure that people get an appropriate process in the administrative structure. And then obviously they have other alternatives that they can pursue. But the idea of having to make final decisions and justify them in writing, if that's what the board does, That's kind of what I do as a profession.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Councilmember Sell.
Hi.
Hi.
Lots of information, lots of background in your application. So my question is, the items that come before you, they'll be very difficult. And so besides what you just talked to us about, what other difficult situations have you had to deal with? And why do you think that you came out of that with the best possible solution with your efforts?
I'm in one right now that I'll share with you. I have a friend who offered a room in her house before COVID to a homeless man who was going to help her with her dogs, care for her dogs. And when she no longer needed that care, she let him continue to stay because of COVID. She didn't want to put him out on the street. And then when things started improving with COVID, she didn't need any help. She asked him to leave and he refused. And it's a long story, but she has now been sued, and I have been sued along with her. I've been named as a defendant along with her, and because I was there to help him get his possessions back when he wasn't interested in getting his possessions, he was interested in creating a lawsuit. It's been a challenge for me because I'm a lawyer, but I'm not admitted to practice in California. I can't represent them. I wouldn't if I could, because you don't do that in a matter that you're involved in personally. But I've been the person who's had to try to help them understand how the legal system works and that people can file lawsuits that are unmerited and that you still have to go through the process, and that I've been going through the process of finding attorneys through our insurance companies who can represent us. It's not resolved yet, but I think I've done a good job of trying to be the person who can help two people who aren't familiar with the legal process know sort of what's going on.
Thank you.
Thank you. My next question is up next, and I appreciate your training and your background. And I'll keep it very short since we're running a little long, but conceivably save a question for one. So think of your one question that you can ask us. But as a trained mediator, so this is a big portion of what that job is. What's your biggest strength, or what do you bring to mediation? And not that this is mediation, but it is judicial to some degree in trying to figure out what's best.
I actually want to ask you about mediation in the context of the personnel board. My greatest strength as a mediator, and this is going to sound really boring, is I know how to work a process. Mediation is a process. It's not magic. It's not psychiatry. It's not law. It is a process. And you just run the process, and you run it and recognize that your role is to manage the process, not to try to resolve the dispute. And unsuccessful mediators think that they're judges. And so you just really have to understand what your role is. And if you understand that, you can be a good mediator, assuming you are capable of listening and assuming you are capable of rephrasing things sometimes. But running the process is the key.
And so on that note, none of us have went to the personnel board. Council Member Hendricks, former Mayor Hendricks, actually was on the personnel board. And so we actually had some perspective up until this year. But Sunnyvale runs very, very well on process. And so what the staff reports would be, what the decision-making, capabilities, giving you the appropriate information and having both sides present their case would be, part of that process. So, not that we follow it, not that, that it's an open meeting for us or anything's appealed to us. We don't even have a liaison there. It's left completely, separate from council. But process the city of Sunnyvale is well run on process.
Right. And so, I'd be very happy with that. That would work well for me.
Okay. Thank you. And finally, Vice Mayor Dean.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being here for the conversation. I actually found it very enlightening. I had two different questions jotted down, both of them have been asked by my colleagues before me, I guess, for the pain of going last.
That is tough.
So I don't have any further questions for you, but I appreciate your conversation.
Thank you.
If you need to stop, fine. I have a couple of quick questions.
Sure. One quick question.
Well, I noticed that the civil service rules say that the procedure doesn't apply if the employee has an alternate procedure provided by an MIU in their bargaining unit. I know there are 6 bargaining units. Are there a lot of employees that are not subject to the personnel board process?
I think all, from my understanding, I think they all are. So I think that's just a clause. It's an out clause at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I think pretty much everyone goes through personnel or grievances.
So I'll ask my other question if I wind up being on the board, which is, why did the civil service rules not have a more, why don't they make more use of mediation than they do?
That I don't.
Yeah.
That's like a tricky question.
Exactly. So Barry, thank you for your interest.
Thanks.
Seeing you again. A final decision will be made by council on the 29th.
Great.
And the city clerk will contact you after that to give you the final results.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you much. Good to see you all. Back.
Thank you. City clerk. We're ready for our next candidate.
Right here.
Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome.
Thank you.
So thank you for applying. I'm saying don't really apply. Let me take a moment to explain the process. So each council member will have an opportunity to ask you a question. And you have about 15 minutes, so keep that in mind as you're answering those questions. First up is Councilmember Cisneros.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
It's really nice to meet you, and thank you so much for applying, and thank you for your work with our unhoused community and other low-income communities in Sunnyvale. It's really wonderful. As you may be aware, the city of Sunnyvale recently had started working more proactively to address the needs of the unhoused and low-income housing insecure residents. We just hired a homeless services director, and so we're really excited about the work there. One of the things that Housing and Food Services Commission will be, that'll be on the work plan, is RV safe parking. Now, you don't have an experience working with the unhoused population, and we have this policy. Can you tell me about how you would approach having a successful RV safe parking program?
So many different angles to come from.
Pardon?
So many different angles to come from.
Yeah. You can just pick one. I know.
Okay. Just pick one. I think striking the balance between keeping the people in the RV park safe and helping the neighborhood feel safe would be time well spent. The people who are homeless or even living in their cars are commonly attacked by people who are housed and who are unhoused. Their boondocks, all their things are on top of their car, things are easily stolen. So they often need protection from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And there can also be always when a sudden new group moves into the neighborhood, it's in the history of humankind, are they different somehow? Then there's naturally fear. And so you have try to do education, try to do outreach to try and help people feel comfortable with what may be happening. I think that trying to deal with that whole size would be pretty important. I'm really excited about safe parking for RVs. There's so many, and or even just people living with cars.
Yes, and families too. And
yes, our kids.
Yeah, and so thank you very much for calling that out. That is definitely a huge component of it. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Next up is Councilmember Bellinger.
Thank you very much, Ms. Stewart, and thank you for applying. So one of the city's major goals is around diversity, equity, and inclusion. Obviously, whenever we're talking about housing insecurity, that intersects with race and gender and sexuality in all sorts of ways. Can you talk about, you know, some ways that we can take that sort of angle, you know, do better with that sort of angle as we address housing issues?
I'm a big fan of outreach, and I think you have to find people where they are. So if I were to talk about it in terms of perhaps like renters assistance, things like that, I think that focused outreach on specific neighborhoods, like very low income neighborhoods, are going to different pockets. The demographic information and the consolidated plan is incredible in terms of who lives where, what different minority groups and low income groups live, and go to those, like maybe try and zero in on those areas where you know that, especially if you have an intersection of low income and a minority. You already know those people are at a disadvantage. They're low income, they're minority, they are less likely to demand their rights. They won't get them. I think outreach there. I really, really wish that the commissions and the council and everything had more diversity on them in terms of low income people, rentals, people renting, not, you know. I think that's really the ideal way, and I think you already tried to do that. But that outreach to specific populations, I think, would be really important. You can find that, like, you have all the LGBTQ groups at different churches, and you know, you have all kinds of different groups of racial minorities. They can be found, the Mexican Heritage Plaza in San Jose, you know, the. There's a San Jose and a ton of outreach there. I don't think Citadel has quite the same thing here, but I think outreach would be key.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Jim Cosman.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayor. Thanks a lot for applying. I really appreciate your services for homeless, and then I really appreciate the special day you created for underprivileged, underdeveloped students, really developmental delayed kids. That's very, very impressive. And then I really like the suggestions you had for first shelters. We need to get through there, and then your suggestions are very, very appropriate. And then I particularly like the analysis of previous meetings, including the council meeting. The question I have is, you say that I have knowledge of specific successes and failures of efforts to help people become rehoused, and I have ideas as to how the process could be more helpful. Can you give me some examples of that, please?
Yes, it gets tricky. So there's a number of people I know who have been homeless. The various reasons they give for not being able to take steps to be housed and tend to go along the lines of, first, you really need to go to a shelter to get your caseworker, to get on the list, to get the VSPADET, to get all of that. An awful lot of them refuse to go into shelters for reasons that we can't control and that we probably won't be able to address. They're afraid, they want to live on their own, things like that. I have had endless conversations with David over behind REI. He said that they're dirty, there's going to be bugs. There's no way there's going to be more bugs than are behind REI. Sometimes you just can't get there. But sometimes the plants are things that are easy to fix. For example, well, I hear that if I go into a Sunnyvale shelter, I'll just be kicked out in the middle of the night when my days are up. And that is true. I can miss somebody named Mary to go there. And for complicated reasons, she was eventually exited, at 8 o'clock at night, in the dark, a single woman, no supplies, no money, no bus pass, no tent, no sleeping bag, no nothing. And she hadn't been allowed to bring her tent and sleeping bag to the shelter with her and are given a storage. It's very, very small. So now I have this next person, Beverly, saying, I don't want to go to the shelter because I heard I get kicked out at night. You're right. And so these are easy, that would be an easy thing to fix her. I'm afraid to go into the shelter, you know, into the shower. I've been assaulted in the shower before. She was assaulted by a woman. You know, this woman beat me up. I'm afraid to go into a shower. They're going to make me shower. No, they're not going to make me shower. But they only have shower curtains. You don't get a door that you get to lock behind you. So things like this would lower the barriers for them to get into the shelter, to get on that line for housing. There were some other people I know who they had been in the shelter and exited, but they did get their housing. And then when the process progressed, they were told, oops, your credit rating isn't good enough. Now, in fairness to the landlord, I know about their credit rating and it was very bad. But it would be nice if some of these barriers could be lowered. You know, then you have to, it does get complicated. You need to have landlords saying, look, I'm trying to do you a favor by taking one of these really low-income homeless people. Now you're telling me I can't have a credit rating. So it is complex. I'm aware of that. But it does seem like there are some things that can be done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Next is Councilmember Purcell.
Hi. Thank you for interviewing with us. You have such a great background. And I'm a former Housing and Human Services Commissioner before coming on to the council. So and a large part of what I did on the commission was look at how best to serve the underserved and that. So you could spend your time doing a million things, volunteering your million things. Why did you decide to invest so much time in helping the homeless?
Well, they're in my neighborhood for one. That's how it started. When I was on the PTA, I was very interested in issues of equity. I knew almost all the really low-income people because they all kept coming to me saying, can I get a lottery for the low price activities? It's like it's not a lottery anymore. You're low income, you get it. So I knew an awful lot of them. So when my kids went from elementary school to middle school, I didn't think I was going to have that type of visibility. But I think it was sort of the little kick on stuff that affected my heart quite a bit. And there they were, they were all around me. So I started just helping some of the people in my neighborhood. I learned at the camp. Frankly, I was afraid to go. I was like, oh, they're all going to crowd around my car. They're not going to let me leave. They're going to murder me. It's going to be the end. And of course, you know, none of that happened. Very sweet people, very happy to receive a bunch of cold sodas. Just kept going back. Made some friends who knew more and more people. They should have more. I felt they're all women. Just the kind of people in the worst condition that I have access to. That I can find. It's very easy to bring them things. I kind of have a contract with the homeless children at the shelters and their situation, and caseworker, no, hardly anybody knows anything. Very scary situation. I understand I've all been moved to a hotel. I'm kind of following them. I think children tug at all of our hearts, and there's not a person here who isn't here because, you know, different things tug at their heart that you want to help people. But in the case of the homeless, they're two blocks this way, one block that way, the camp, nowhere, the park I used to take my kids. I'm just really vocal and easy to find and easy to help.
Thank you. And so thanks for your service in the community and helping out, you know, and definitely the unhoused. Very quick, you mentioned the unhoused location here, you're talking about Carol Inn, or?
There was a person named Mary who was living on the corner of South Bayview and Old San Francisco Road.
No.
She's the one who actually went through the Sunnyvale shelter and was San Jose, I'm recording right now.
Okay. Okay, so I thought you were talking about a homeless, an actual affordable housing development.
Oh, there was that one as well.
Yeah.
That one's the one on Old San Francisco Road. And what's it called? I don't remember.
It's for the
Life's Garden.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for saving me. I completely blanked on it. That's about maybe three blocks from my house.
Okay. And so have you dealt with that? You know, that community at all directly, you know, to see how that affordable housing is working, you know.
No, but I would like to.
Okay, just wondering. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. Vice Mayor Dean.
Thank you. And thank you, Elizabeth, for being here today. And I really appreciated what I've heard so far from your conversation. I think those are just very salient points that we benefit from those insights. I wanted to ask you that when you're looking at the things that will come before you on the commission, if we appoint you, what's going to be the framework you use to make decisions? What are some of the things you're going to be weighing in your head?
Well, there's two sides to every picture. You complain about the issues about the shelter, there's issues with, you know, do we have enough people to supervise these things? They put a lock on the door, will people refuse to come out? I'm very interested in rental issues. Everybody I know rents except. Every kind of average except one person. And there's just a ridiculous tumble of issues there. And I know that you have a right to lease thing that's being worked on. And I've heard of different things of, you know, maybe limiting how frequently landlords can raise rents, things like that. There's always, you know, society to consider. The landlord and their plans for retirement and their plans for maintaining properties, and how much foresight they have as to whether or not they're going to sell a property and things like that. So looking at whole side, I have two kids in the high school, and they're wonderful too. First of all, I hear things about public school system, but I'm a great fan in most ways. But anyways, we're introduced to this website called ProCon, and it's really good to hear the other side. You've got to take the time to look at it, because that is how you're going to bring the two parties together. Not just if you wave your flag and say, "Ooh, you know, hungry child." You've got to how you're going to progress is looking at both sides, and that is a little bit of a challenge for me, because I do, my heart feels more for me perhaps one group than another.
Yeah.
So that would be my challenge, and that would, but I'm, it's really good to do it. Just go to that website and look up everything that you're upset about, and you'll feel better the next day. You really your hair will catch on fire while you're reading it. But you have to live it both.
I appreciate hearing that a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Councilmember Mel.
Yeah, Elizabeth, I'm Russ. It's nice to meet you. And I've just really enjoyed hearing your thoughts and story tonight. I don't have a question for you. I'll keep it short. For the sake of time, what I will say is I've got a junior and a sophomore at Fremont High School. It's a great school. My kids are having a good time. And the email that I saw earlier this week that I really appreciated is they said, we're going to continue free lunches for everybody. And if that's one thing, Elizabeth, that came out of the pandemic is just scrapping all of the bureaucracy about income and qualifications and thresholds and all of that. So I was really happy to see that email, and I can sense that you were as well. So thanks again for applying. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, Elizabeth, thank you for your interest. A final decision will be made by council on the 29th, and then the city clerk will contact you after that meeting with the final results.
Well, thank you. You're being cheated, though. You didn't have to ask a question.
No, I did. I did a quick. Lifeguards.
That's true.
No, that's fine. Okay, right. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you so much.
And that's it. Good night. We're ready with our next candidate.
Over to the panels. So Linda, you should see a pop-up asking you to accept being promoted to a panelist, which will allow you to both speak and share your video with everybody.
We can't hear you, Linda.
There. How do you?
There we go. Now we can.
Did I press the right button? Okay, good. Thanks. Hi.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Thank you for joining, and thank you for applying as part of the process. I'll give you a quick overview of the process tonight. Each council member has a chance to ask you a question. You have about 15 minutes to answer. As you're answering those questions, keep that in mind. And with that, we will go to our first question. Council Member Mellinger.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for applying this price.
I'm in Cancun.
Oh, very nice. Thanks for you. Well, now I'm jealous.
Good. Okay.
Okay. So one of our city strategic priorities is on improving diversity, equity, and inclusion within the city of Sunnyvale. So you applied for the Housing and Human Services Commission. And this is an area that really strongly intersects with that. You know, we've got, for instance, you know, substantial issues with housing overcrowding in the Latinx community. LGBTQ homelessness is a national problem. Can you talk a little bit about how, the Housing and Human Services Commission can take a DEI lens as it approaches its work?
You know, I also applied for the personnel. And if I have to select one or the other, my preference would be personnel. So am I going to be asked questions on both of those or just the one?
That will be to my colleagues to decide. but, you know, there are DEI aspects to the personnel board as well.
Right. So... I really hadn't thought about the housing aspect. I think that the housing bringing in the DEI is looking at the entire issue of who needs the housing, what is the greatest issue, how can we best approach it? And I think that there are a number of individuals in certain categories that need housing more than others, just because of the general lay of the land and Sunnyvale itself. And I think that part of that issue would be taken care of by looking at the needs rather than what, how can I say this that sounds right? Looking at the needs of the individual, where DEI would become a part of that automatically rather than specifically. If does that make sense to you, that you're looking at the entire picture and there are certain segments of our society that need more help than others, and they would probably fall in a DEI category. So it would become evident.
Yeah. All right.
If you can understand what I'm saying, I mean, I'm not even explaining it correctly, but rather than going at it specifically, you would take the whole picture.
Right. Excellent. All right. Thank you.
Next up is Councilmember Srinivasan.
Thanks, Linda. Nice seeing you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for all your community services, your wonderful HR and corporate background as coach and instructor. So I had prepared a question for Human and the Housing and Human Services Commission, but then let me revert to the personnel board.
Right, and my background. Yeah, my background is primarily personnel, human resources, doing management training in conflict resolution, being a mediator, and all of those things. You know, my background entails that. Housing, though, is I find to be very important in Sunnyvale, especially because we have a lot of building going on. I've worked closely with Sunnyvale Community Services, and I think that would be a great resource to work with the housing issue, because they seem like to be the first line of defense when you're talking about housing and really helping those that need help.
The question I had for you regarding personnel board is, the finding and conclusion of personnel board is final with no appeals.
Okay.
So how would you use your skills to accomplish this?
I would use the skills that I have in a number of ways, but one in particular is when you're dealing with personnel issues, it's usually a conflict or a mix-up in communication. And as a mediator, I think one of the primary things you do as a mediator is you don't solve the problem, you listen to it. And you listen to both sides of the issue. If there are more than two, obviously you listen to all sides, but you get them to, as a mediator, the first part is getting them to talk to one another to see how the problem can be solved at that level. And part of the mediator is to work through that process to allow that to happen so that they come up with some equitable way to handle a conflict. And that would be the first thing that I would definitely do, is to get both sides to understand the other point of view.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up is Council Member Sell.
Hi.
Hi, Linda. Thank you for coming before us, and have a lot of background and a lot of areas. Thank you. So you did mention that you were interested in Housing and Human Services Commission. I'm a former Housing and Human Services Commissioner before coming to the council. So mine's going to be Housing and Human Services Commission. So I noticed that on a future work plan for the Housing and Human Services, that on the agenda, it speaks about a potential agenda item for the future, such as universal basic income pilot program. And I was wondering, what are your thoughts on, you know, universal basic income? If you were on the Housing and Human Services Commission that came on the agenda, what are your thoughts?
That's interesting, because I have a couple of thoughts of view on that. Am I one to just hand out money as a universal income? Not really, because I think that anytime you just hand it out, people have no stake in the game and they're waiting for the next handout. Whereas if there's an opportunity to work for that on some level and in some way, the value of what they get means a lot more to a person, I think. So that would be a tough one to work with. I'm more inclined to say there are opportunities where you could earn a decent wage than just give money out as a universal wage.
Okay, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Now my question. So thank you, of course, for taking time during your vacation for being
thank
here. You said you served as an HR director at a private school.
Right.
Without divulging, you know, specifics, what was your hardest decision as HR director?
Wow. Well,
what was the adult situation?
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of HR issues because they were dealing with kindergarten through eighth grade. And with the lower grades, there are a lot of rules and regulations that the state put in place that teachers have to adhere to. And sometimes teachers overlook them, and we can't allow that because they were very, very strict, and you had to adhere to those, you had to adhere to those rules and regulations, whether they made sense or not. And sometimes we all know that sometimes rules and regulations go into effect and you kind of scratch your head and say, well, why is that so? But nevertheless, the bottom line is it needs to be followed. And so the rules and regulations, very often I'd find myself in front of the a judge along with the employee and their representative. And I'd be representing the school's point of view on a disciplinary issue. And it would be sometimes hard to argue that, but I mean, you had to do it and you had to be the advocate for the school because this was just the way it was. And they were hard issues. Some of them didn't make sense, but nevertheless, they had to be adjudicated in front of the judge. And so you want to know the hardest one?
You can give a quick summary. I think you've explained your position, so I think that's good.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you had to do it, and you had to be there, and you had to be the advocate for it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing from personnel board. They do have to make a decision at the end of the day.
They do.
Okay. Thank you. Next up is Vice Mayor Dean.
Thank you. And thank you for being here today, Linda, and for your application. It's really good to hear your insights on all these things. I'm curious, when we talk about, especially the human services and housing programming for the city does, one of the big things that we do, obviously, is helping people who are struggling with homelessness and the unhoused community. What do you see?
Struggling to do what now?
Struggling with the homelessness. Okay. And what do you see as the biggest causes for homelessness in the city, and what can we do about it?
You're saying, what can we do about the homelessness in Sunnyvale?
What would you say leads someone to end up on the street? What do you think the biggest factors are?
The biggest factors of finding them on the street?
How did they end up there?
Well, I think each person has their own story, that's for sure. I think that because of the economic situation that we're going through, along with perplexes a lot of people. We find a lot of help wanted signs, but yet there are a lot of people still out of work that can't seem to get it. And it could be because they're not just qualified for certain positions, but they find themselves without work. And when you don't have work, you don't have a place to stay, and everything goes downhill. And so there's a whole segment of society that wants to work, but they can't find it. So they find themselves in a homeless situation. There are others by design who medically have put themselves in a position where they find themselves homeless, whether it be drug related or whatever. That is definitely an issue. And there are some people, and it perplexes me, that by choice, this is where they want to be. And you know, so you find on one spectrum people that would never find themselves there, and yet due to circumstances beyond their control, they find themselves there, all the way the other side of the spectrum where this is a choice that they've made. When I was feeding the homeless, we did that through Rotary. And this was over at the Armory when they had that available. There were people that actually, like I say, it boggles the mind, but there are people that prefer to be on the street. And I mean, you all may not be aware, not necessarily aware of it, but understand it. And I would never say I understand it. I just have to accept the fact that people want that.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing your insights.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Melton.
Yeah, hi, Linda.
Hello.
Thank you for your application. I really appreciate it. Thank you for calling in from Cancun. I've got to say, your Wi-Fi signal is just rocking. It's a really good connection, and I'm grateful for that. I'm thinking about your application in the context of the personnel board. You marked that as your number one preference. Could you just give me a couple of sentences about what you think an agenda
would look like at the personnel board? What would that hearing look like? Do you have any knowledge of how that all transpires?
My understanding of that would be they would meet when there is an issue among or between employee, perhaps employee and employer, where there is a resolution. You need a resolution. And this is probably where mediation would come in, or just hearing both sides of the situation. I put together a program for SHRM, resolving employee conflict, and I wrote the mediation program for the University of or the College of Notre Dame in Belmont, and I've taught both of those and been involved in that. So I think a lot of it is hearing issues and then making the recommendation to you know go forward, whatever that recommendation would be. So.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And finally, Councilmember Cisneros.
Hi, Linda.
Hello. Nice
to meet you. And thank you so much for taking time out of your vacation to come talk to us about city stuff. Really appreciate it. My colleagues have asked some really interesting questions, and I have no further questions at this time, but thank you.
Yeah, your answer is the easiest. Thank you.
I hope so.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks for taking time during your vacation. A final decision will be made by City Council on the 29th.
Okay.
And the city clerk will contact you after that meeting
okay.
to get you the final results.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. See you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. And at this point, we'll take an 8-minute recess. We'll come back at 7:00.
Are we
ahead? For about 5 long, we'll be fine.
Oh.
Thank you. Good. Okay, let's go ahead and reconvene and city clerk, please bring in our next candidate. Evening, council members.
Evening.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Mayor.
Let's go ahead and I'll take a moment to explain our process. Each council member will have an opportunity to ask your question. You have about 15 minutes for the interview process, so keep that in mind as you're answering those questions. And first up is council member Srinivasa.
Thank you, Mayor. Pretty more than nice meeting you. And thanks for your application. I really enjoyed reading about your work with the at-risk community, LGBTQ community. Thanks a lot. The question I had is, in your application, you mentioned that I think further efforts can be taken by Sunnyvale to prevent landlords from increasing rent at an unreasonable rate. Are you familiar with the State Act AB 1482?
Is that the act that allows up to 10% raise per year?
Yeah.
I don't feel that's very affordable. I'm familiar with it. I've reviewed it. That doesn't seem realistic. Rent can be $3,000 raised for families and people that just come to Sunnyvale for the first time, like I did. And then they're forced to get roommates, with inflation and on top of inflation, that a rent increase that can be 10%, it oftentimes is higher than 5%. In my case, it's 8%. I had to look for a roommate. So, on a salary for an engineer, that doesn't seem very fair. It doesn't seem like, it seems like something could be done about it, possibly. I don't know. Like, I have not been on the housing and human services. I know that's a state thing, but I feel maybe there could be something done in that aspect rather than building more and more housing. I mean, that's also a solution in moderation, but getting control on price gouging could be another solution.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next up is Council Member Sal.
Hi, thank you for interviewing and applying for this commission. I'm a former Housing and Human Service Commissioner. So I was just looking at their work plan and some of the items that might be coming up on the future agenda might be universal basic income pilot program. I was just wondering, what are your thoughts about that? Or do you have any thoughts?
I do have some thoughts on that. I think universal basic income, for the most at-risk people that are at risk of perhaps, losing everything, losing their apartment, losing their job, that might be a nice supplement to income. But I'd have to see the full extent of the universal basic income pilot program to know who's actually going to. As a widespread solution, I don't generally agree that that's a great idea. As I think that can contribute to further inflation and rising in housing costs. So it has to be very carefully implemented.
Thank you.
Thank you. So my questions now. You said that you hadn't watched any meetings and commissions or prior to this. Did you get a chance between your application period and?
I got it.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I got a chance to watch some of the interviews. I tried going through some of the documentation of people on the Housing Service Committee approval forms and saw projects that were approved or were proposed. As for larger meetings that you mentioned, I was not able to access that.
Okay.
I tried finding it on YouTube and I was only on the interview, the one link.
Okay, so that's all on the Legis chart, but that's fine.
Okay.
So any takeaways as far as what they were reviewing? Can you repeat the question? Any takeaways from what the Housing Human Services Commission was doing?
Takeaways? I think what they're doing is fantastic. I'd like to see human services more widespread expanded, like helping people get back up their feet in job training, expand that. I think I applied to the role so I could try to expand on things that I didn't see that they were doing, like protecting most at-risk youth by, preventing or having outreach programs, whichever way that might be implemented. And like I said, if I haven't been on a role like this, I'd have a lot of learning to do. But I think that's something that I'd like to discuss if I was to get the position with the rest of the board members.
Okay, thank you very much. Next up is Vice Mayor Dean.
Thank you. And thank you so much for applying and for being here today. My question, and if it's okay with the mayor, I might ask one very quick question and then a longer one. The first one is, I noticed you mentioned on your application that you're currently getting your master's. I was curious, is that in person? Is it virtual? Is it hybrid? Just how do the logistics of that work?
So I am studying my master's through Johns Hopkins online program. It's called the Whiting School of Engineering. And
okay, that's a perfect answer.
It's a hybrid
program. Yeah, I just want to make sure you be here for all of you then.
Of course.
And then my actual question is, I'd be curious to hear about what your framework is going to be when you're making decisions on the commission. What sort of things are you going to be taking into account?
I would take into account historical data. I would take into account trends, rising housing costs, rising unemployment in the area, maybe increase in unhoused people. I'd like to see what was implemented in the past by board members and what worked and what didn't work, where the money's going, how it's spent. See if there's a better way to balance the budget because there's not unlimited funds. And then try new things. Some of the things I had suggested, I'd like to see if we could implement that and see if maybe that could. I know that if I was in the role, I'd be successful after his first term if we see a downward trend in some of those negative categories.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Next is Councilmember Mel.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Morgan. I'm Russ. Thank you so much for applying for the role, and I really enjoyed reading your application. There's one word that sort of left out to me, and the background for my curiosity is there's a former council member who I have a ton of respect for. He always lamented in his mind what he referred to as the Manhattanization of Sunnyvale. And he was always talking about ultra tall buildings that you might see in Manhattan. So I was wondering if you could tell us more about Manhattan in the context of your application and how that might help you view things here at Sunnyvale.
Good question. I actually just got back from Manhattan. I have family there. It might be a big city, but sometimes you run into people you know. I went there and I didn't have one of my great uncle's numbers, but I ran into him at Washington Square Park.
Yes.
I didn't even know where his address was. So in terms of housing and human services in Manhattan, it's a big city. It's nothing like Sunnyvale, but they have their own problems. And I lived there quite a long time, about 6 or 7 years. And I got to see some things that I thought worked and didn't work. And that's my opinion. There was an influx of homelessness or unhoused people throughout the city and during the pandemic. And one thing that I thought did not work was that they decided to put them in the Upper West Side hotels, which completely stopped businesses in that area from getting the customer base that they needed, because there was just very concentrated area of people. And you see a lot of people with mental health, sadly, mental health problems there. I think that's another human services program that can be expanded on. And I don't want to go off on a tangent, but you can talk about the city all day. I love New York City. They also have a lot of homeless shelters. you know, throughout areas. And I think some of the areas that they're more prominently already are the churches. And the churches do service as well. Like, you know, they have like, I forget which days, but they have certain days that they have super kippah. They offer canned goods and to people in need. And so I feel like my experience in seeing, living in a city like that and seeing what worked and what I thought did not work might be beneficial.
Wonderful. Thank you for
sharing.
Thank you.
Next is Council Member Mrs. Harris.
Hi, Morgan. Thank you so much for applying and for your interest in serving your community, your adopted community, as it were. I think that's really wonderful.
Yes.
You don't have to live here for 50 years to really care about it, I think. So I appreciate so much. Something that you called out in your application a couple of times was support for at-risk LGBTQ, and that is a specific intersection that, you know, we're thinking about DEI, we're thinking about how to address poverty in a way that keeps people out of homelessness and also helps them to stabilize. But that is an intersection. I'm queer. And so, and we have, you know, several members of council who have identified. And so we're kind of wrapping our heads around how do we do that. So I'll be very interested to hear your ideas.
Great. So I suppose some of my ideas would be having outreach programs for people that were younger people that are, you know, feeling not supported by whether that's friends or family.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes to feel like they don't have a support system.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be great if Sunnyvale was sort of a beacon for that,
mm-hmm.
and it was promoted. A lot of people don't know what human services are available in any city, mm-hmm. let alone Sunnyvale. So you can really dig through that and make it more, I guess, prominent up front, maybe on the Sunnyvale website. Have just more, it's really a tricky situation because, you know, you don't want to be too involved in people's
mm-hmm.
families, but just to ensure people that if they were, you know, disowned,
mm-hmm.
they would have a place to go. They would not be on the street. Nobody wants to see a 17 or 18 year old or a bit younger. So those are the people that I think are the most at risk. There are other groups of people that are marginalized that are at risk. But I expect that a lot of people that have or are part of the LGBT community know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it might feel silly today, it wasn't silly then. So those people I think should be sort of elevated on the priority list rather than people that may suffer from people that have been given multiple chances. I think they should be helped too,
mm-hmm.
but people that are the most at risk should be maybe if there's a room available, get them on their feet
mm-hmm.
for now.
Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, it is still an issue quite out in the high school.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of kids need to stay somewhere for a couple of weeks with some homes due to their identity. So very real. And I appreciate you.
Thank you.
And finally, Councilmember Melander.
All right. Thank you very much for applying, Mr. Friedlander. And thank you, Councilmember Cisneros, for stealing my question. So I'm going to take this a little bit of a different direction. You know, one of the things that is a big difference between Manhattan and Sunnyvale is access to queer community resources. There is, to my knowledge, not a single gay bar between San Jose and San Francisco. To my knowledge, you know, the services and the community spaces that are available are very limited. And so we've talked a lot about sort of the housing and the homelessness aspect of things. I want to talk a little bit more about the human services side of things. And, you know, what do you think that the city can be doing, you know, through city services to help foster, you know, greater community, you know, help foster and bring together the LGBT community?
Well, Sunnyvale does have an LGBT Pride Day that I saw was posted on the Sunnyvale Instagram page.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding what else they can do, I don't know the capability of Sunnyvale to open gay bars. but I also noticed that that doesn't exist here, so most people probably go to San Jose or San Francisco. At least a few of my friends do that. Let's see. I don't know. I'm sorry, I'm at a loss. That's a good question. I'm sure there's more that Sunnyvale can do for it, but I was happy to see that we had that one event in June.
And I will say that if you haven't had the chance to make Murphy Avenue Pride, it is a fantastic event. I definitely encourage you to go.
Yeah, I apologize. I can't answer that better. I'd have to do more research on what the city can offer.
I haven't been able to answer it better myself. So, all right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Morgan. Thank you for being here and your interest, of course, in this position. A final decision will be made by council on the 29th, and then City Clerk will follow up with the final results.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Thank you. City Clerk, we're ready with our next candidate. Hi, Charles. Good to see you. Let me take a moment to explain the process. Thanks for applying. Each council member has a chance to ask you a question. We have about 15 minutes for the interview, so keep that in mind as you're answering those questions. And first up, we have Council Member Self.
Hi, thank you for interviewing. You have great ideas for the library. Going on with that, you have limited resources. So for the next few years, where do you think the best investment would be for library resources so that it has the most impact? Like, what direction would, if there was a grant, like large grant, where would you think we should invest those funds into to have the biggest impact?
Yeah, I think we should focus a lot on more programmatic. We're seeing a lot in the other county libraries. I've seen in Milpitas and Cupertino, they're doing a lot more kind of emergency services as calling centers, as places for resources. I've seen Narcan distribution, seen just different resources that I haven't seen as much. I've seen kind of classes and different movies or things shown at the Sunnyvale Library, but not so much, I think, partnerships with different nonprofits on a larger scale, where I think there's a lot of opportunity. I don't think it would be too much cost, especially if we do partner with a lot of the nonprofits locally. If there could be something that, something small, like even in an after-school tutoring program, a lot of it is online tutoring. If we could work with the high schools where they could do just 4 hours or 4 hours a week or something like that. As a former tutor, I think that was really valuable for me to teach kids and also for the kids to have an environment where they can feel safe. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm up next. And so one of the biggest decisions council will be making over the next year is whether or not to renovate and make an addition on the existing library or completely build a new one. What's your opinion? What do you think? What decisions or information should go into that decision?
I think some of it will be seeing what is the difference between this time with the bond and potentially the last time. You know, with the last one, it didn't really even come close to passing. It was about 7% off. So what are we prioritizing in terms of the cost differential? Because at that time, it was assessed for $500,000 homes. And that was a lower cost for property tax increases. And if we're now at a higher value homes, are we going to ask people to pay two times that price or four times that price? So I think a lot of it is looking at, are we going to get the best deal for what we're going to be proposing? Because a lot of people, from what I saw in one of the meetings was the GIS presentation, that Southern Sunnyvale, even though the home costs are a lot higher, it was actually a lot less utilization. So kind of balancing that of whether we can get a number where people can support.
Okay. Thank you very much. And next up is Vice Mayor Dean.
Thank you. Good to see you, and thank you so much for applying. I enjoyed your application a lot. My question is, you listed on here, and just generally, you've done a lot of really cool experience doing government public interest work. I'd be curious to hear your take based off of your experience on what sort of things are important to keep in mind and what makes for good public service.
Do you mean in terms of in the library or?
Sorry?
Do you mean in the library?
In terms of, you know, being appointed to a commission makes you some form of a public servant, in my opinion. What do you think are the attributes that you've been able to get exposed to that you would be taking with you if you were to become an appointed public servant for the people of Sunnyvale?
Yeah, sure. I think some of it is personal responsibility, for sure, because it is, a lot of them are volunteer positions, a lot of them are unpaid. So a lot of it is how much you get out of it, and then how much you put into it. So I think in public service, you know, people can kind of just slide by doing the bare minimum. But I think if we really want to, as public servants, really grow or push that next level, sometimes it's making yourself uncomfortable. Sometimes it's learning from other people or what other cities might be doing better. And I think there's always room to grow. So always wanting to learn and seeing what other people are doing.
Definitely. Thank you so much. Thank you again for applying.
Thank you. Next, Councilmember Melton.
Hi, Charles C. Thank you so much for your application. I really appreciate it. I was listening to your response to the mayor's question about the main library potential bond in 2024, and I really admire your research into the last bond measure. So let me shift topics to the branch library under development in North Sunnyvale. Can you just tell us what you know about that and any suggestions for City Council about what's happening with the branch library?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I still hope it's slated to open next year. I know there's going to be delays as things happen. I think I'm really excited for it because, you know, what I mentioned was my parents couldn't pick me up after school. So my school was really close to the library, so I could just walk to the library every day. So I think it's going to be an amazing resource for the kids that live in the neighborhood. And it will be a nice community resource center. So I'm really excited to see two, if we can have a lot more of the different programs I was mentioning, potentially more Spanish-speaking programs there too. I would like to see potentially some even computers that might be in Spanish so that students or their families could utilize the services together.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Cisneros.
Hi, Carol. Great to see you. Bond and the liquid. So I'm so glad my colleague mentioned that. So I'll go down to, you mentioned the LIB availability, right? So figuring out what people want from a library versus how to actually provide those things. And we have a limited budget. So you mentioned analyzing that data and figuring out the answer. Can you give me an idea of how you would prioritize different service level increases in the library in a general sense?
Yeah, I think based on what I look at is kind of the popularity. For example, one kind of utilized service that people don't know too much about is the video games they're offering. And of the 150 or so, they're all on hold and they're all checked out. So, you know, for something like that, we could even work with local gamer groups and then have them donate some of the games instead of selling them to GameStop for $3 or $4 so that more kids or more people in the community could use them. In terms of Libby and library resources, there are certain books that are on hold for much longer. For example, like Andy Weir books, those are on hold for months at a time. So if there's specific books like that, if we can see, you know, the hold times are much longer, that we can just prioritize those sorts of books and not kind of in general books altogether.
The targeted approach. Interesting that I have to have the keys groups. I've had that one before. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up is Councilmember Mallory.
Thank you very much for applying, Charles C. So we've heard a lot, had some very excellent in-depth answers about sort of programmatic improvements at the library. But I kind of want to double back to what the mayor was asking about, not so much whether, you know, whether to renovate or to build a new library, but regardless, we're talking about some major infrastructure changes to the library in either of those approaches. And my question for you is, what sort of built features, what sort of built infrastructure would you like to see prioritized as part of either a renovation or a rebuild?
I think some of the features I would like to see is more ADA accessibility. What we've done with the Magical Bridge Playground, I'd like to see some of that, more of that incorporated. So, you know, kids of all abilities or can be in the library and feel comfortable in the library. Sometimes it can be a loud setting for them. And so I'd like to see more different accessibility included. And I'd also like to see, it was already kind of talked about, or mentioned in the previous version, but environmental sustainability, and maybe even, you know, say in the parking lot where they build the solar panels, so kids can kind of see firsthand what different features are parts of the library. I know in the Cupertino Library, they even have an aquarium. That's a little much, but something, you know, things that are interactive where kids can see and play and do.
Thank you. And finally, Councilmember Srinivas.
Thank you. Thanks for applying. I really enjoyed reading your application, especially your responses and then the research on the trends and then of library usage, bond, all those things are really interesting. You also mentioned about collaboration with regional libraries. That's really intriguing. The question I had is, you mentioned analyzing the data of Great Recession and 2012 and 2013. Have you done any research on that, or have you come across what are the why the visitor peak during those times, or are you still looking at that?
Yeah, so that was one of the presentations where they presented library trends for the year. But in general, during recessions, people, when they lose their job, they tend to end up going to grad school or applying, they're going back to school, something of that function. So it does make sense that they would be going back to the libraries or finding resources. For example, there's grad school application books, like GRE books. So some of it, I think, is that people were looking for more resources, seeing what skills they could build, maybe to pivot into another career. So I think there's some of that. And then for the digital peak, it was really during the pandemic.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So that's all the questions. Charleston, thank you for your interest in going through the process. A final decision will be made by City Council on the 29th. And then the City Clerk will contact you after that with the final results. Okay. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
City Clerk, we're ready with our next topic. Good evening. Thank you for being here. So let me explain the process. Each council member will have an opportunity to ask you a question. The interview should be lasting around 15 minutes, so keep that in mind as you're answering these questions. And first up is my question. So we're looking at building a new main library. And so one of the decisions that we need to make over the next year is whether or not we would go out for bond, but for a renovation in addition for a brand new library, what do you think are the highest priorities for that new library?
So first of all, I don't know if the question includes us, whether you ask me whether renovation is a better one than the brand new. So
if you have an opinion on that, yes. But what do you think is most important?
Yeah, I would definitely say renovation, mainly because Sunnyvale Library has been very close to my heart for the past 23 years. It's been an integral part of our lives. My kids literally grew up at the library, doing summer reading programs and all the activities. I'm a patent practitioner, so I attended the first patent. I listened to the first time USPTO director 10 years ago. That's what motivated me to take a patent law as profession. So definitely renovation, because renovation and then build on new on top of that. And then as far as, you know, then thinking about what can be added, I think there are a couple of areas that could be looked at. So first of all, we need a bigger library, maybe a complete floor just for studies, because I've been to other libraries also. At some of the other libraries, I often used to go for studies or work. the current library is quite small. There aren't enough spaces. So maybe just, including more resources, there may be a new, just a brand new program. People can just come and work for hours or study for their exams, high school students or, you know, middle school students. That could be a possibility. And then one of the other ideas I had was, building some structure outside the library. Frankly, when you enter the library right now, the entrance is pretty small. So if you have something outside, just people could hang out and read, parents could read books with their kids, that would just be more welcoming to the crowd. That's definitely one area. And then another point I had in mind was we probably need to bring in more multilingual resources, educational materials. Like, for example, there is such a big Indian community in the Bay Area. However, the only resources I've seen at the library are Hindi books. But there are 22 Indian languages, and I'm not saying that we have to have books from all Indian languages, but if you have Persian, so Hindi and Persian is there, but Persian, then why not Sanskrit or, some other, Indian languages and other world languages. I'm sure Asian languages are there, but those resources compared to English are just, very low.
Okay.
So that would be a great, thing to add.
Thank you very much. Next is Vice Mayor Dean.
Thank you. And thank you so much for your application and for applying. And I will say that last point you just made was very salient. I think as one of the two South Asian members of the council, I hear you exactly. I think you make a good point about the need for nuance when we're thinking about different cultures. I'm curious to hear what will be some of the things that you're going to take into account when you're making decisions on the commission.
So first of all, I will be looking at the current library goals. And then, of course, the future goals and short-term goals and the long-term goals. And then what are the ways to achieve the short-term goals? I would be looking at what are the ways to brainstorm with my colleagues to reach the short-term goals. And then, for example, one short-term goal would be just community outreach for, let's say, if we are doing a test run for a new program at the library. Then we need to have a lot of community outreach. So maybe I'll be thinking about that. Or if there is another program, let's say teaming up with the schools to decide curriculum, which is one of the points that was suggested by Chair Wong, I believe, in one of the meetings. So that would be something, that I would go into the details of that and, I would give my opinion and feedback.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate hearing it.
Thanks. Next is Councilmember Melvin.
Hi, nice to see you again. And thank you for applying to serve on the Board of Library Trustees. You served previously on the Heritage Preservation Commission. Just tell me about that and how it all wrapped up for you.
Yes, so I served on the Heritage Preservation Commission for a very short while. When I filled out the application, it wasn't very clear to me what the Form 700 was. And then when the time came to do that, I spoke with my family members, and as a family, we were all not, comfortable doing that. So in fact, when I looked at the open positions again, 2 weeks ago, I listed out all the positions that did not require Form 700. And it's, I was first of all very happy that I got to do the library, because I previously even applied for a job position at library. As I said, I grew up reading books and making regular visits to the library. So this is just sort of a way for me to give back to the community and library patrons.
Thank you for sharing that story. We're all familiar in this room with the Form 700. And so I understand where you're coming from. I haven't thought it through. I guess you're telling me that the Board of Library Trustees does not require.
And I'm like, so previously the Form 700 requirement wasn't very clear, I believe, on the application form, and then it was made clear later on. So that's what I was told by the city staff as well.
Wonderful. Thank you for your candor. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Cisneros.
Hi, Jared. Thank you so much for applying. It's a pleasure to meet you. And I think that
during the pandemic, we all learned a lot and we all had to make adjustments. And if you're familiar with our library, you know just to what extent they went in order to serve the community there. The pandemic was a really hard time for a lot of people, but I think there are valuable lessons, silver linings to take out of that experience. What are some of the things you think we learned from a library perspective during the pandemic that we can continue into the future to strengthen our library?
So I think Sunnyvale Library has always been at the forefront of technology and adapting new technology. And I think that was just staying up to date with technology and all the latest things and staying current with the community outreach. That's something that really pulled us through the pandemic, because that pandemic, during the lockdown, we were all at home and, maybe reading hopeful books, hopeful stories made us, believe that we were going to get through. This was a huge, there was great value in that thing. So because Sunnyvale Library had that digitization and digital books available and everything, I think we could do that. So I think just increasing the community outreach and staying on top of technology and, in line with today's times.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next is Council Member Mellinger.
Thank you for applying, Ms. Sharma. So my question for you, you spoke a bit about sort of the infrastructure changes we'd like to see made to the library. I'm going to flip that around a bit and ask, what sort of additional programming would you like to see at the library?
So additional programming, I would say more educational resources and not just, so there are a few educational resources, but educational resources for all ages, such as guided, let's say if somebody wants to learn programming really seriously. So there are tech literacy classes right now, but those are pretty light, or maybe there are, the programs look a little scattered because I've been browsing the library programs forever. one thing I noticed that many of those don't fit into working professional schedules. So there are times when I'm so fond of sewing, actually, and I want to go there and be part and then, teach others or, learn more. But the timings of that is such that does not work. So that would be one thing. And then again, adding more guided educational resources that maybe somebody wants to take the LSATs and, you start lessons, somebody comes and does voluntarily is willing to teach a professor from or SAT or the GREs. That, and then teaming up with schools to decide the curriculum, maybe that's really, because I heard that in New Jersey Library, they did the state librarian gets to work with the schools to do the curriculum. So maybe that's something that we could look at.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Srinivasan.
I'm impressed with the different careers you have.
Oh,
exactly.
Just a jackpot.
I'm a former teacher to guitar instructor. I like the suggestion about outdoor reading, which is very, very good. In your application, you mentioned about for Rotary, you organize different speaker series.
Yes.
One topic came to my mind. Mm-hmm. I underlined this. Yeah. Tech literacy for underprivileged school kids. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. So one of the programs that I arranged was, one of my family, one of my friends actually, she is a robotics engineer. But instead of after migrating to the US, instead of going after a corporate job, she started a program for underprivileged kids to teach them robotics. So she came to the Rotary Club of Sunnyvale and I invited her and she spoke about that. And it was a really great program. And she, in fact, said that, all kids can participate in the programs, but the vigor with which the kids that don't have access to all the tools, they are so motivated to learn from her than the ones that have access, but they are just there because their parents made them go to the class. So that was really an interesting program. And I'm happy to say that she recently reached out to me for her patents because she wants to file a few patent grants. Probably.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Councilmember Seth.
Hi. So thank you for applying. A really interesting meeting, your application. This tends to be limited resources. So if there were, it was a large grant that the library got, where would you'd like to invest that funding resources into that you would think have the most impact for the next few years?
So one is, I think, adding multilingual books. That would be the top one for me right now. And the second one would be outside renovation. So are these, is this grant specifically for
anything?
Yeah, then the renovation, yeah, especially outside renovation.
Okay.
Of that. And of course, the third one would be the educational resources that I spoke about. But I think multilingual would be a big thing.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
So let me explain the wrap up. So council will be making the final decision on August 29th.
Okay.
And then the city clerk will contact you after that with the final results. So,
okay.
Ruta, I just want to, it's great seeing you. Thank you for going through the process.
Yes. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. City clerk? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for joining. Thank you for going through this process. So let me give a quick overview of what will happen. Council, as you've heard, you have about 15 minutes. Every council member will have a chance to ask your question. So as you're answering, keep that in mind, although you're our last applicant tonight. So you can go for hours. So with that, Councilmember Melvin, start off.
Hi, y'all. I'm Russ. It's really nice to meet you, and thank you for applying to serve on the Board of Library Trustees. My question is going to be, tell me what you know about what's going on in Sunnyvale, because we might have a bond measure for the main library, and you might want to talk about what you would do with that. Or if you want to talk about the branch library in the north part of the city, just tell me your knowledge about what's going on with libraries in Sunnyvale.
So I moved to Sunnyvale about 14 years ago, and I walked into the library and I said, I want to work here. And my application, I am a librarian. I had never worked in a public library before. I've worked in academic libraries and medical libraries. Nonprofits and various other kinds, but they were in public. And I realized that I did actually want to stay in academics, and I'm back in an academic library now. But there's just so many things about Sunnyvale Public Library that I love. And I mean, on one hand, on the other hand, I do know that the city is somewhat spread out, a lot more than of the small cities that make up the county and the Silicon Valley were one of the biggest. And I know that for some of the people who live on the farther end of the city, they don't get the services that they should be. And I see my kids go to Fremont High School, and it's also the same thing. I mean, those are the kids who come furthest away. They're traveling the furthest and they're getting the least services. And I think definitely investing in the branch is something like the most important thing I think for the library to do at the moment. I will also go back, I mean, I think because I sat and listened to the other questions, back to the mayor's question about what I would do like for the current library, whether I would renovate it. I think the building is less important. It's more important is what's inside. And what's inside is the physical materials, but it's also the employees. And a room with books, a building with books in it is not a library. If you don't have staff who can create the programs, who can build the collection, who know the community and know what the community's wants and needs are, then there's no point in having a library. It's not going to get used, or it's not going to get used in the best way it can. So I would say invest, yes, in the new branch, possibly invest in renovating the existing library, but really, really, we need to invest in staffing and really bringing, you know, high quality people, which we do have. I'm just saying we're going to need more.
Thanks for sharing. By the way, I've got a, excuse me, a sophomore and a junior at Fremont High School. So
you understand.
Yeah, I gotcha. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Cisneros.
Thank you. Hey, it's great to meet you.
You too.
And thank you for applying to have a senior at Fremont. Well, senior in what, a couple of weeks?
No, in a less than a week.
Less than a week. How is this happening? Okay, so we'll get to my question. You know, you mentioned public libraries are much different than many other types of libraries you have. And one of those big things that kind of glares to me is resourcing. Right? There's a lot of competition for these grants. Mm-hmm. They're working within a city budget. And so when we're thinking about things that we could expand or do on a service level, and you're very familiar with library services, as you said, how would you prioritize the service levels to increase with a very limited budget?
Okay, that's a tough one because, yeah. And I know how these agreements with the people talk about like digital and how, why can't we have more of this? They don't, digital books don't take up shelf space, but I know how much they cost. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. I work with electronic resources all the time. And I spend my time explaining to my friends why there has to be a hold if it's a digital book. But I think we still are going to have to invest in those technologies because I think by having the digital things, we make the library accessible 24/7. Mm-hmm. And as Ms. Sharma, who was here before, spoke about how wanting to be part of a program, but it was during working hours or things like that. So the fact that we can still access the library, you know, at any time, people who work the night shift and then sleep in the morning, but they can still, you know, they don't have to actually physically come to the library during library hours. If we could extend weekend hours, maybe that would be good too, but just having making the library accessible as possible. And I also agree that we have such a diverse community. I lived in Israel for a large part of my life. My kids are also bilingual. And we could, you know, when my youngest finished Cumberland, which was a few years ago, I was over at the last PTA meeting that I was in. They mentioned that 10% of the kids at Cumberland come from Hebrew-speaking homes, which was blew my mind. So we don't have a collection in Hebrew. And like Ms. Sharma mentioned, we have one Indian language. We have Hindi books, but we do have a large, very large Indian population that speaks other. We should have, you know, a larger Spanish, Chinese, different Chinese, more than one Chinese language. I admit I don't know which Chinese language we have. We have Mandarin and Cantonese, but I think it's something that we, you know, we really need because we have such a diverse population and we have to figure out how we can best serve it.
Awesome. Thank you. I mean, yeah, I had to give you a hard question. It's a good one, I think. So thank you.
Thank you. Next, Councilmember Mellon.
Thank you very much for applying this up. So my question is going to be, you know, when you look at the programming available at the library, you know, what sort of additional programming might you like to see?
Personally, I'd like more author talks, just because I really enjoy those. And we do have local authors. I know we've had them. We've had people coming both for children and adults. I think that's the kind of thing where sort of what I want is not really that important. I think it's the thing where we need to maybe survey our public, find out what our readers, what our users want, what our non-members want, and maybe what bring them into the library. If we could somehow, you know, city pull the whole city and not just people who have library cards.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Next, Councilmember Srinivasan.
Thank you. Thanks for applying. You have a very good background. You have a master's in library science. And then I really appreciate all your community involvement and working with the community. Thanks. You are working for Stanford with working with electronic resources. That's interesting. And then I think you alluded to some of the measures, resources you would bring into Sunnyvale mm-hmm. Library. My question was, what are the other recommendations based on your day-to-day work you can adapt to Sunnyvale Library and such?
Well, I think one of the big things we do at Stanford is we are a private university with a lot of funds. We cannot we do not complain about our collections budget. No, I know, even talking to colleagues at other colleges and universities, we're doing okay. But even at that, we are part of consortiums. We don't often purchase alone. And even within Stanford, we have we have the main library, but we also have the medical school and the library. We do things as a group, which makes our negotiating power bigger. And I think that's something that we should look into. I don't know how it worked out that there is Santa Clara County Library, which like Cupertino Library is part of that. I don't know why Sunnyvale isn't and why we chose to be a standalone library. And I think there are benefits to that, but maybe there are ways that we could partner with some of our cities nearby and maybe purchase things together. Gives us more better negotiating power with the publishers and the providers, such as Overdrive, which is, I know how much those things cost, and then be able to shorten our waiting lists on the digital materials. We'd be able to, I know we do interlibrary loans, so we do borrow things from other libraries, but maybe even just sort of usage, like if we could look at our usage compared to theirs, and they have things that aren't moving off their shelves, but we might want, and things like trade or things like that, or share, just to make things work better. And I love the fact that I think we also have a lot of stuff that often the public doesn't talk about. I know Sharma mentioned the video games, but there's also like the library, the museum passes, and the national park stuff, and like how do we get that out so that our city knows about these things? Because I think a lot of people don't realize how many services the library can provide.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Councilmember Sell.
Hi. Thank you for interviewing and experience of deep. So, given your background, how do you think your background helps you be a trustee, like for the library, more so, or what in your background would make you a good trustee?
Well, I think I come with a lot of knowledge on how library works and how, like, I admit it's mostly from academic libraries, but I do keep up on the literature and I go to library conferences. I'm in touch with, lots of my, friends and colleagues from around the country, around the world, who are librarians and work in different library services. So I'm very current on the literature about what's going on in the library world. So I think I can bring a different perspective from somebody who's completely outside, and I can bring that and share it, and still but on the same time I'm somebody who lives in the city and knows like what my neighbors want, what my friends want, what my kids need. So it's a good mix. Thank you.
Thank you. And so I'm up next, and you've already answered my question regarding the main library, but that's good. You come uniquely qualified from a background and training, as well as kind of ongoing exposure in your job to library conferences and all that, to bring the best ideas to Sunnyvale. We're looking, sometime within next year, knock on wood, by the end of next year, to open up the branch library in North Sunnyvale. What services, and I understand you live closer to this area, but what services do you think should be prioritized there as we're looking at, it's fairly been historically an underserved portion of our community?
I think we need to build a collection that will reflect the community, which could be, question of languages. Somebody mentioned, maybe some more Spanish materials, or just in general. I'm sure that is information that the city has, who lives where. And I also saw the presentation that the librarians gave about the gist about where more cards are being. One of the things that they mentioned in that was the cards that are just for school kids. And I remember, I have four kids. They've all went through the school system here. I remember one of them went to the library and got a card. I don't know what happened with the other three. And my kids are readers, and we go to the library all the time, and they borrow books, and they've learned how to use the digital books, and they, you know, whatever. And they, even with me working at Stanford, they're still coming here to go to the library. But I feel like we need to get out more into the community, maybe partner more with the kids, with the schools, have the schools come. So again, our schools are more this side of the, but figure out a way to get those school children into the library, have the librarians go into the schools, more outreach. And then of course, any sort of, you know, after school clubs for the kids, so that, you know, for parents who are working long hours, and also maybe some sort of, you know, job training, ESL classes, anything that we could help with the, you know, integrate the community better.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Thank you for, to me, answering that and understanding, you know, from a librarian standpoint, what you would do, and from a community resident standpoint, what you do for your family. So thank you. Finally, we have Vice Mayor Dean.
Thank you. And apologies for missing the first half. I have to go to the bathroom. But I'm going to assume that you've probably been asked about the work you do at Stanford.
I'd
love to hear you talk about some of your experiences between actual librarian and what you would bring to Sunnyvale from it.
Okay. I did talk a little bit about that. I can add a little more. So I joke that I'm a librarian who doesn't see books nor patrons, because I work behind the scenes on electronic resources. So I haven't, unless I make an effort to get up out of my chair and walk into the library, the actual library where the books are kept, I don't see them. I work on maintaining our catalog so that all the information, we buy huge collections of electronic books in all sorts of fields. We have to make sure that our users can find them. So that is really a big part. We're also currently switching our whole back-end system, the library management system, which is a huge endeavor. We're moving to an open source library program. And I'm working on training our staff on using the new system, which goes into effect next week. We're all kind of freaking out. But I'm going to a conference instead of being here. Library Foundation.
I appreciate hearing about the work that you do. Thank you so much.
So Yael, thank you for going through this application process. The final decision by council will be made on August 29th, and the city clerk will contact you after that to find the results.
I look forward to hearing them.
Thank you.
Have
a great evening.
Thank you.
So that concludes our board and commission interviews for the evening. I will move to adjournment. This meeting is adjourned at 8:17 p.m. Thanks for everyone who participated. Good evening. Good night.
Bye. And so we'll see you.